Hello, this is Dee, reading the Vermilion County News for October 12th. We'll begin our reading with the front page article entitled, Remaining Active, Knights of Columbus Closes Building, by Jennifer Bailey. For more than 100 years, the local Knights of Columbus has raised money for local charities and served the community in a variety of ways. The Knights closed its lounge and banquet hall March 16th, at the start of the coronavirus pandemic, and have found it necessary to close the Columbus Club, its building, at 310 Bryan Avenue for good. The Knights of Columbus has had a presence in Danville since 1903. The Columbus Club opened in 1996 at its current site. The group has continued to take on community projects, such as its annual Tootsie Roll sale to raise money for local children with disabilities, free throw and poster contests for local youth, and supporting the local Catholic parishes. Last year, the Knights of Columbus, Council 754, purchased robotic cats and dogs for veterans at the Veterans Affairs Ileana Healthcare System. They also started the Glow Bingo fundraiser, and they had their annual golf outing last month, which raises about $3,000 annually for local charities. Rich Miller, Mike Poor, and Richard Drake, who have been Grand Knights, said they are financially unable to reopen. The building and land are up for sale. We want all our members and people that supported us over the years by attending events and meals to know that we very much appreciated them. We do plan to start having events again as soon as possible, Miller said. They will have events out of other locations, such as Schlarm and parishes. Poor said the Knights of Columbus is not just a building. The Knights of Columbus will still be an organization in Danville and Vermilion County, he said. Miller added they're not going anywhere as Knights of Columbus. They plan to still have their fundraisers, which fund scholarships and other projects. Anything we do stays local, Poor said. This has been a crazy year for everything, Poor added. The Knights of Columbus also has seen a decline in membership through the years. At their peak, they had around 700 members. Younger people don't join clubs anymore, Poor said, adding that other organizations are seeing that too. But Drake said they still have members from all over. History. Danville Council Number 754 was founded April 19, 1903. On that day, the first Danville Council class was initiated. The program opened with Mass at St. Patrick Church, after which the charter members went to the old Odd Fellows Hall, where the first, second, and third degrees were exemplified. A banquet followed. 25 years later, on June 24, 1928, a reenactment of the original founding of the Danville Council took place, a banquet allowed at the Wolford Hotel. The council rented various rooms around the business district of Danville, East Main Street, above where Beard Ice Company had a sales room, across the street south of Main Street in a room where the Elks Club is, rooms at the southwest corner of the square over a tavern, rooms in the Lincoln Theater building, West Main Street, a hall over the Tom McCann Shoe Store on North Vermilion Street, Moose Club rooms on North Hazel, and one venture into buying a home, which didn't work out because of the Depression. The council for several years also rented the premises over Stoom Tea Company, Red Spot Paint Store, and Winther Bakery on North Vermilion Street. It also purchased property on East Main, including 409 East Main Street, which is now Spanky's. In 1953, Illinois Knights of Columbus State Convention was in Danville to honor Council 754's 50th anniversary and to celebrate newly acquired clubrooms opening. The council was awarded Star Council several years. It had other sites before moving into the constructed building at 310 Bryan Avenue. On June 2nd, 1996, there was a formal dedication. Danville Priests Mass Celebration, Council, Community, Open House, and Community Banquet. In October 1996, Council members completed construction of a storage building at the site to house food and food freezers for dinners, banquet tables, chairs, barbecue cookers, deep fryers, and historical records. A concrete patio also was poured to be used for outdoor wiener roasts, steak fries, and picnic settings. More information can be found on the Knights of Columbus website at https://unite.org/council site/CNO=754 and their Facebook page. Our next front page article is entitled Council Reviews Draft Budget and Tax Levy by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. About this time last year, city officials were talking about expected revenue from the casino. The projected $2 million in casino tax, local share revenue, has been removed in the city's newest proposed 2021-22 budget, with other state revenues the city receives also expected to be down due to the coronavirus pandemic. Revenues are projected to see a 7.87% decrease. However, home rule sales tax revenue is expected to increase from $8.1 million this fiscal year to $8.6 million next fiscal year, with another year of proposed tax distribution changes. In addition to cannabis retailers' occupation tax revenue projections increasing from $300,000 this fiscal year to $432,000 next fiscal year. The Danville City Council heard a presentation Tuesday night on the first draft of the city's proposed 2021-22 budget and 2020 tax levy. Discussions will continue at next week's Public Works Committee meeting. City Council action on both is expected December 1st. City Comptroller Ashlyn Massey said she was presenting a worst-case scenario budget, with the city's general fund showing a $321,492 deficit. "They're not great," she said, of state revenue projections, such as state sales tax and corporate replacement tax revenues. Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. said if the city and state see a better recovery from COVID-19 than expected, those increased revenues could erase the deficit. Williams also told aldermen that at the start of budget discussions internally with city staff, the budget showed a $2 million deficit. Cuts were made to have it closer to being balanced. "We never want to have a deficit budget," he said, adding that the city also had reserves to get through leaner times if needed. "We're not quite where we want to be on our budget." Massey said the city also could see a reduction in revenues still this winter and spring 2021 due to the pandemic. The city's proposed budget totals $56.9 million, up from $53.2 million for 2020-2021. The city's general fund expenditures are down from $27.15 million this fiscal year to a proposed $25.15 million next fiscal year. Other funds are up from $35 million to $39 million in expenditures. Revenues are at $34 million, with $21 million required from the general fund and $1.2 million from reserves. In other reports, health insurance is projected to decrease by 7.5%, saving about $300,000. And city officials talked about early retirement incentive payments still being paid from past employee retirements. The city's property tax rate is expected to stay about the same, going to a projected $2.2890 from $2.2883 per $100 of equalized assessed valuation. City officials project a 1.02% increase in the equalized assessed valuation of $301 million. The total levy of $6.8 million is a 1.05% increase. The library's levy is projected to increase 0.07% to $1.965 million. Williams said library officials had asked for a higher levy due to the minimum wage increase and then came back with a reasonable levy. Williams also said about the city's tax levy, he didn't want to see property taxes raised at this time. Ward 5 Alderman Mike Poor said he was very happy with the proposals and said about the library, it's a bargain for our residents. For pensions, the levy shows about $4.5 million going to the fire pension and $3.9 million to the police pension. These are statutory minimum funding amounts. There would be more than $1 million in abatement from the public safety pension fee for each. In other business Tuesday, the council approved purchasing a 2021 sewer lift station service truck for $74,899 from Alltech Industries, Inc., and vacating a sanitary sewer easement on Aqua Illinois property off Logan Avenue and Fairchild Street. Also, an agreement for renewal of code enforcement software. Also, a request for assistance from Illinois Environmental Protection Agency and U.S. EPA in relation to community-wide environmental work and brownfield sites. Also, a contract for fire service for the Veterans Affairs Illiana Healthcare System. Also, purchasing two police vehicles and disposing of two police vehicles via trade-in. Also, amending city code regarding hotel-motel occupancy to have the city receive taxes when people book hotel rooms in the city via third-party sites. And finally, they considered amending the city's wage administration chart to rename the Mass Transit Maintenance Superintendent position to Mass Transit Maintenance and Facility Supervisor, with a starting salary of $50,000 and max of $70,060. Create a new union position of Lead Mechanic in Mass Transit with first-year hourly pay rate of $25.07, $28.02 in the second year, and $29.49 in the third year. An increase in the minimum base pay rate to $10 for seasonal and part-time employees due to the minimum wage increases. Our other front page article is entitled, Bennett Seeking Re-Election in the 52nd District Against Ruggieri. Jennifer Bailey. Democrat Scott Bennett is seeking a re-election as Illinois State Senator in the 52nd District against challenger Republican Alexander A.J. Ruggieri. The Commercial News sent questionnaires to the candidates for the November 3rd election. Bennett, 43, of Champaign, is married to Stacy, and they have two children. Education, Gibson City Melvin Sibley High School, class of 95. Illinois State University, University of Illinois Law School. He's employed as an attorney at Spiros Law, and is a member of the Illinois General Assembly. Prior Senate service, appointed in 2015, elected in 2016. Political community involvement, he's a trustee at the Urbana Free Library, past president of the Urbana Rotary Club, member of the Champaign County Community Justice Task Force. Ruggieri, 43, of Savoy, is married to Jessica, and they have three children. Education, Tuscola Community High School, a BA from U of I, JD from Western Michigan Cooley Law School, LLM, which is a master's in law, from Western Michigan Cooley Law School. Employed as an attorney at Ruggieri PC. previous political experience and organizations involved with, currently serving as an elected official as a trustee in the Village of Savoy. First question, why did you decide to seek re-election or election to this office? Bennett's answer was, since arriving at the Illinois Senate in 2015, I have worked hard to increase funding for higher education, to create a more equitable funding formula for our K-12 education system, to protect safer and cleaner drinking water for our families, to pursue a criminal justice system that is more responsive to its victims, and to promote our state's leading industry, agriculture. These are difficult tasks, but I have achieved some success in each area, and I am now seeking another term in the state Senate to continue to build on these accomplishments by strengthening our economy, improving our education system, and promoting the health and safety of our communities. Ruggieri's answer was, I chose to run at this time because of the drastic change in the political climate here in East Central Illinois. The people of East Central Illinois, and specifically the 52nd, are tired of being overlooked as policies and laws that benefit Chicago consistently get passed, while the needs of this area are not being met. We need a person that will stand up for the citizens of the 52nd District, and I will. The second question was, what do you consider to be the most important issues concerning this office? Ruggieri's answer, I think the most important thing that needs to happen is to find a way to support our citizens in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. We have suffered not only physically, but also financially. East Central Illinois is the heartland of our state, and the people who live and work here need our help. We need to come together and develop a plan that will not only keep us safe, but also allow people to move forward. Too many of our small businesses and the employees that support those businesses are facing circumstances that seem insurmountable. How much longer can they get by without real help, real relief? We need to take a serious look at the legislative level to see how we are going to provide this relief. Bennett's answer to that question was, this job is all about representing your 215,000 constituents and making their lives a bit easier when we can. One way we can do that in the 52nd District is by protecting jobs, by fighting for increased funding for education. It's an area that can absolutely transform our state and its people. So many of our challenges can be met by thoughtful, long-term planning and investing in our future. By building a strong foundation in community colleges and vocational education, we can help our current employers grow and keep their businesses here in Illinois. By encouraging and empowering our four-year institutions to innovate, as in the Research Park at the University of Illinois, we can ensure that we will grow our own companies and create new enterprises for tomorrow's jobs. Question 3. What do you want the public to better understand about this office? What are challenges and how do you overcome them? Bennett's answer, the role of a state senator is vastly different from that of a governor or president. Unlike those executives, a legislator cannot accomplish his goal of helping his district by acting all alone. Instead, he must build a coalition of other legislators until he finds enough votes to pass a bill, 30 in the Senate and 60 in the House. I have consistently achieved that by getting to know my fellow legislators of both political parties and listening to what issues they care about. Sometimes you can pass a bill by depending on only members of your own political party, but that can be difficult with diverse caucuses where we don't always agree. In those instances, as in my bill to protect the Middle Fork from toxic coal ash pollution, it was vital to find Republican votes, such as Representative Mike Maron, to help me convince a few of his colleagues of the merit of my bill. The best legislators aren't often the loudest voices in the room, but instead are those that can put together a team of competing egos to accomplish their shared goals. In addition, as downstate Illinoisans, it is increasingly difficult to find enough votes to pass a bill with just downstate legislators. A large enough percentage of the state population lives in Chicago and its suburbs that the majority of legislators live in those areas too. So if we want to get good things done for our downstate constituents, which is our job description, it doesn't do us any good to alienate those northern legislators with a tax on Chicago or their hometowns. Instead, we must find issues that need to be addressed in both our communities. For example, both Chicago and Danville face the challenge of escalating gun violence, as well as underfunded schools. So I look for bills that can help my constituents as well as their own, and in that way I can often find the necessary votes to effectively do my job by improving lives for my own Central Illinois constituents. Ruggieri's answer: the role of any representative in the state legislature is to listen to their constituents and advocate for them at the legislative level. These elected positions carry a special place of responsibility and should be held to a high standard. The state senator has a moral obligation to do what is in the best interest of his constituents when it comes to creating policy or passing legislation. They are the essence of a democracy, and their ability to think freely and to accurately represent their constituents is the foundation for that democracy. When a state senator is no longer accountable to his constituents, but his decisions are rather controlled by the larger party, our democracy is put into danger. I believe that I will better represent the constituents of the 52nd District by listening and better advocating for them in Springfield. The fourth question: what qualifications do you think make you the best candidate for this office? Ruggieri: as I currently serve as an elected official in the Village of Savoy, I've been intimately involved in passing balanced budgets, supporting vital infrastructure products, providing community services, and working with surrounding communities to plan for the future. This has all been done while keeping taxes considerably lower than neighboring cities. Our quality of life, with the lower tax burden, attracts many new residents and business every year. I will take these principles with me to Springfield and truly scrutinize how our taxpayer dollars are being spent. In addition, and probably most importantly, I will listen to the citizens of East Central Illinois. I was born in the 52nd, and it is my home. I have a lifetime of experiences that I hope to leverage for our benefit and highly developed leadership skills to guide my way. I will not be subject to the demands of an overreaching party, and will do what makes sense for the people of the 52nd. I believe that politics should be more about coming together to solve problems than pulling us apart. I hope to work with the best that the Illinois legislature has to offer in coming to solutions that benefit everyone. And Bennett said, I have a proven record of leading to improve the lives of residents in our community. During my time in Springfield, I have worked with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle to pass laws like coal ash pollution protections, securing millions of dollars in funding to improve our roads and highways, and assisting community colleges like DAC, created ABLE accounts to help families with disabilities, and giving survivors of sexual assault an opportunity for justice when they are ready by ending the statute of limitations that protected powerful sexual predators, like Speaker Dennis Hastert. As the chairman of the Senate Agricultural Committee, I made resources and advice available to rural families in crisis with the Farm Family Resource Initiative. After decades of frustration, I also successfully secured a casino license for Danville to bring much-needed jobs and revenue to Vermilion County. I am proud of all I have accomplished, and I hope I have earned the support and trust of the people of Vermilion and Champaign counties to serve for another term. And we'll now turn to obituaries. The first is Charles Cumby Jr., 90, of Los Angeles, California, passed away on October 3, 2020, in Los Angeles, California. He was interred in the Inglewood Park Cemetery Sunset Mission Mausoleum in Inglewood, California. In accordance with his wishes, no funeral or memorial service was held. Daniel Dan Huffine, 63, of Danville, went to be with his Lord and Savior at 3:35 p.m. on Wednesday, October 7, 2020, at his residence with his family by his side. A celebration of the life of Dan Huffine was held at 6 p.m. Sunday at Crossroads Christian Church in Danville. Miles Clark officiated, and visitation was held from 3 to 6 prior to the service. He was laid to rest at 2 p.m. on Monday, October 12th at Chapel Lawn Cemetery in Schererville, Indiana. Memorials may be made to Carl Hospice or Crossroads Christian Church. Dr. William Frederick Hensel, Bill, 92, went to be with the Lord at 3:48 p.m. Tuesday, October 6, 2020. Bill and his family expressed the desire for any memorials to be made to King's Kids Village Orphanage in Nairobi, Kenya, Africa. Bill's desire is that these gifts be used for the education of the children there. Tax-deductible donations may be made to Encouragers Unlimited Ministries and earmarked as Hensold Memorial for King's Kids Village and sent to Post Office Box 1436 Danville, Illinois, 61834. Memorials may also be sent through the website www.encouragelife.org/donate and earmarked as Hensold Memorial for King's Kids Village. Details for the memorial service are yet to be determined. Information about the service can soon be found at the Kruger Cone Pape site. Augusta Gussie Winders, 94, of Catlin, passed away at 3:20 p.m. Wednesday, October 7th, 2020, at Hawthorne Inn in Danville, Illinois. Private family services at Robinson Chapel in Catlin, burial at Mount Zion Cemetery in Cave in Rock, Illinois. Memorials may be made to Catlin United Methodist Church. And now we'll turn to a staff report entitled Library Reduces Some Services, Danville. In response to the recent increase in positive COVID-19 cases in Vermilion County, the Danville Public Library will temporarily reduce some services. Beginning October 8th, the following services will not be available: public computers, copy machines, printing and faxing services. All in-person programs will be postponed or moved to an online-only format. The buildings will be open for collection browsing and checkout, in-person card registration, and in-person reference assistance by appointment only. In order to maintain a safe social distance, only 25 patrons will be allowed in the library at one time. To assist in reducing in-person interactions, all items must be returned through the outside book drop, and all requested items must be picked up using the curbside service. Curbside pickup is available Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., and Tuesday, Thursday from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. Arrangements for no-contact home delivery will be made for patrons who cannot pick up their items during those times. It is also available by request. Patrons are asked to wear a mask and maintain social distancing standards, including at service desks while visiting the library. Patrons may be asked to wait outside as needed. As the COVID-19 situation evolves, staff will continue to evaluate services and adjust offerings as needed. Library hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. for high-risk patrons and 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for all other patrons. This has been Dee reading the Vermilion County News for October 12th. I hope you have a great day, and I look forward to reading with you again soon.